Hello, my friends. Greg Colville here in our second installment of the show this week, and we are dedicating it to a conversation between Alan Schliemann and I, my wonderful colleague here at Stand to Reason. Alan, welcome to the show again.
Thank you very much.
And yeah, it's always great to do things with you. Alan knows so much about so many things that I don't know hardly anything about. It's just great to have him on board. You do the Muslim thing. You're so good at that stuff. You're so good in the evolution stuff. You're in the abortion stuff, the ethical issues, and here we're talking about transgender issues. It is true that we've given you the hardest things, and actually we didn't give them to you, right? You really gravitated towards.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to remember about Islam. I think it was sort of just a natural fit.
Yeah.
That since my family was from the Middle East,
right.
And I kind of had some understanding about Islam just from that.
Right.
That it sort of fit naturally with me taking up that subject. But I did do some extra study on it.
Sure. You know, well, lot of extra study.
Yeah.
You took a whole course from some of the best in the business, and they really ran you through your paces. And, of course, you're always on top of that stuff. So, this is another area where you have expertise, and partly because of familial issues. You want to say anything about that? The gender issues?
Oh, yeah. You mean in terms of having personal relationships? With,
yes.
Yes. So, I mean, in my previous work, in terms of my career as a physical therapist, I had close friends that I worked with that identified as gay and lesbian, and then also have family who identifies that way as well.
Right, right. So, you know, what I think this does for you, and then therefore for us, Alan, is that you have intimate relationships with people who fall into this category. I was going to say struggle with this, but they're not struggling with it all the time. You know,
right.
They are given into it. So, and those relationships inform you personally and emotionally about how you move forward in this. I mean, it's easy for a person, say, more like me, who addresses this as more of an academic issue, and I don't have people in my life on an ongoing basis where the academic issue becomes personal.
Right.
You know, so how do you deal with your gay sibling, or how do you deal with a member of the extended family or somebody you work with, or if you have a nephew who is transgendered?
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that. So, but for you, there's a deeply personal element, which I think appropriately informs your approach, which as a Christian then is as you mentioned many times, love and truth. I think is the way you put
truth and compassion.
Truth and compassion.
Yeah.
And so this is why I'm glad that you help us in dealing with some of these issues here on the air, because you can come to our listeners who are having to address these issues, can inform me. It helps me a little bit as I encounter things, but it won't help me that much because I don't encounter it that much.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other people who live with this on a day-to-day basis and in fact are getting confronted more and more with issues like gender.
Yeah.
Which is a much smaller piece of the pie than, LGBT kinds of things, although
the T stands for transgender.
There
yes.
you go. Okay. So, I mean, there was the gay issues, gay-lesbian issues, and that was big. And so we have a segment of the population for which this is a concern, and we have to address that. And then you got a much, much smaller sliver. But for some, this is almost taken – it's almost like a cause celeb here, isn't it? It's like this is the thing to be all worked up about in the last few years, even though, I mean, what sliver of the population has, what's the right way to put it?
I want
to
say commanded this much attention?
What I was going to say is has gender confusion, but that's not a politically correct way to put it. So what would be a more neutral way?
Well, now that the term is gender dysphoria. Which is a, if you have...
That's a clinical term, though, isn't it? Kind of a...
Well, yeah, it's the clinical term. In other words, they don't call it gender identity disorder anymore. Because that would presume that you have... Well, it just presumes that you have a disorder because you're... perceived gender is different than your biology.
I see. Okay. So
now
dysphoria
it's dysphoria, which is like this discomfort, uneasiness, psychological distress about the fact that you have a biological sex, which is different than your perceived gender identity. So it's only a problem if you have distress about it.
Well, how would you... Okay, so... But that still doesn't cover the base, then. The base I'm looking for mm-hmm. is the person who is transgender.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's just the term.
Oh, yeah, that's just the term.
All,
yeah,
that's all we have to do. And so transgender. So now, what slice of the population is transgender?
I think, well, depends on the study you look to, but I mean, I've heard people say around 0.6%. Mm-hmm. But then I've seen other studies that isolate certain areas and segments of the country which have higher and lower incidences. So it just depends.
Well, that's partly because of population.
Yeah, sure.
So, I mean, metropolitan areas are going to draw a higher mm-hmm. degree or percentage of those again, now I'm looking for the right language, struggling with these issues. Yes. That's the first thing that comes out of my mind. Because...
Identifying this way.
Yeah. Okay, fine.
That's what I said.
But the concept of struggle is not completely inappropriate when we're talking about transgender.
That's right. Well, even with homosexuality, there are people that struggle with same-sex attraction.
Yeah.
I mean, they may not be religious, although many of them are, but many people still have unwanted same-sex attraction
mm-hmm.
and that are not religious. And the same is true with people who would say that they experience gender dysphoria, which is they have they're distressed about the fact that they have a gender identity that feels different than their biology.
Okay. You know? But that distress has consequences.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the suicide rate
right.
of transgender
mm-hmm.
is.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
I'm hanging on his every word. That's why I see it in his face. I said, I'm throwing you a softball.
No, I didn't know you were. I was looking at you thinking you're going to complete your sentence. I thought maybe. Anyways. Yeah. No, that's. So according to the best data that we have, 41% of people who identify as transgender attempt to commit suicide, mm-hmm. which is staggeringly higher than the 1.6% of the rest of the population. And so that's an indication, yes, that they are experiencing distress. And this is why I often will call my teachings or segments or presentations, or I should say subtitle them if I talk about transgender issues,
mm-hmm.
I'll say transgender truth and compassion. And the reason I say that is because once we as believers mm-hmm. discover what is the truth about what these people are experiencing,
mm-hmm.
they are deeply hurting inside. They are some, you know, they would say they're confused, they're experiencing distress, and they're attempting to commit suicide at that rate.
Mm-hmm.
That should drive us to have compassion for these people.
And I just did the math, which I hadn't done in our earlier discussion.
Right.
We did a Facebook Live, which
mm-hmm.
is available now on our website. People can go to that.
Yeah.
We're trying to cover some of the same ground here on the radio. But in which you can get actually more of the information without having to look at us. So this might be,
less painful.
Yeah, less painful.
To just
experience.
Listen to us.
But we already talked about this before. I just did the math on the suicide rate or attempted suicide rate for those who are transgender is 26 times higher than the average population.
Right.
26 times higher. Wow. Okay, so that means, what did I say, struggling? Yes, they're struggling. Because mm-hmm. if they weren't struggling as a group, you mm-hmm. wouldn't have this kind of statistic.
Mm-hmm.
Now then, there is this other question is, why are they struggling?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer from their side is going to be...
Well, they're struggling. I mean, they would say they're struggling because of the culture's unwillingness to accept their identity.
Mm-hmm.
That's, of course, different than their biology.
So now it becomes our fault, you know, because mm-hmm. people like us who are not responsive to these new categories and affirming of them, now we're the one. And I'll tell you my first reaction, because I like to play this out in my mind a little bit. You see people talking on shows like this, and if I were challenged with that kind of statistic, and I've seen that happen, what I'd want to say is, or with that explanation of the statistic, I'd want to say, wait, you mean that person is committing suicide because of my view?
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. That person is killing themselves because I disagree with them? Now, that all by itself sounds bizarre to me.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I'm not saying that there can't be some people that are pushed to the edge mm-hmm. because of the tremendous social pressure.
Right.
But that sounds bizarre to me, for one, because there is not that tremendous social pressure. Everywhere you turn nowadays, there's affirmation mm-hmm. of this. Mm-hmm. And people are bending over backwards to accommodate.
Yeah.
And those who disagree are being bullied into silence.
Yeah.
So where is this incredible cultural pressure?
Right. And even in, I don't know if you wanted to ask about this, but even in the article that we got looking at people who were transgender, pursued sex reassignment surgery, and then they did a long-term sort of follow-up study with these people, found that the suicide rate or the attempted suicide rate was still astronomically high in people who had experienced satisfactory sex reassignment surgery,
right.
but were still experiencing incredible psychological
right.
distress. And that study was actually completed in Sweden, which is a country that is largely affirming of this,
yeah.
and far more probably progressive than the United States is with regards to this topic.
And both of those are radical understatements. They are excessively affirming. There is no hostile climate there in yeah. the culture by the people, and that's been the case for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
So this, what it shows is it points to that there's something, I mean, really, come on, there's something else going on here.
Well, that's been known for as long as we've been studying this question, up until the last 10 or 20 years.
Yeah.
Scientists, medical doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists have all recognized if you believe you're a female when you're biologically male, they would consider that a disorder.
Which is, pardon me, but it's obvious. And see, this is something I've noticed as a trend over the years, that in some of these, I don't know how even best to describe it, things like this, they become these pet projects where the culture is demanding that you say the opposite of what is obviously true.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, for a lot of people, including Christians, they get buffaloed into wondering whether they're the ones that are weird or odd.
Mm-hmm.
And so someone says, well, gender is infinitely flexible. And my response is, no, it's not. It's not infinitely flexible. There aren't 100 genders. There's 2 genders. What's flexible is people's imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Just because somebody can imagine it doesn't mean that that's a legitimate flexibility. You know, when they talked about people who were mentally ill and had schizophrenia and they had delusions of grandeur.
Right.
And so you see movies like this from the past. They
sure.
don't do this anymore. And
yeah.
here's some guy walking around the clinic who thinks he's Teddy Roosevelt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the mustache and he's got the outfit and he's you know, bully this, bully that, bully the other. And nobody's taking him seriously because
right.
they don't think that identities are infinitely flexible.
Mm-hmm.
He's not who he thinks he is.
Mm-hmm.
He's not well. That's why we have him here where we can take care of him properly.
Mm-hmm.
But how is that different than essentially at the core than this kind of thing right here? You know, than this mm-hmm. gender confusion or... Now, gender dysphoria, there's a reason that there's dysphoria, that
yeah.
is people, and that is because something's amiss.
Yeah.
Which I think that sex change operations bear testimony to.
Mm-hmm.
They just think the thing that's wrong is their bodies.
Right, right. Yeah, they want to change their bodies to match their perceived gender identity.
And, you know, the people who pioneered this, tell us about this, too. Because
oh, yeah.
You know the facts a little bit more precisely than I do. The people who pioneered
yeah,
this
was,
in New York.
It was in Johns Hopkins University.
Right.
Paul McHugh, who pioneered the program that was doing sex change surgeries for people, I think, maybe back as early as the 70s or 80s. And so what they started doing was doing follow-up studies on their patients after they had surgery. And this is kind of what I was referring to earlier, and that is that a lot of them would say yes when they are asked, are you satisfied with your surgery? They would say yes. But they didn't experience any resolution in the psychological
right.
distress.
Right.
And, of course, that's just one of the many problems associated with these surgeries because, number one, you don't see a resolution in their psychological distress. Number two, you're oftentimes, if not most times, amputating perfectly healthy organs.
Mm-hmm.
And these are, of course, permanent decisions.
Yes, right.
You know? Number three, here's the other thing that I always point out is that you can be mistaken about your perceived gender identity, but it's hard to think that you're mistaken about your biology.
Mm-hmm.
And even Harvard University came out, I don't know, it was earlier this year, they started passing out brochures on this and saying that people's gender can be a whole bunch of different variations. But they said, and it can change even on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Well, if it can change on a daily basis, well, your biology doesn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, isn't it possible that at the time when you think that you're female, when you're biologically male, isn't it possible you could be mistaken?
Yeah, and this goes to the point of perceived gender identity. If a thing is an identity, then that's something that's kind of fixed. It's what you actually are. But if it turns out that this can fluctuate, then it ain't what you actually are. It's the way you feel about yourself in the moment, and that is very, very different kind of thing.
Yeah. So just to follow up, though, on this, sure. Paul McHugh, so after years of doing these surgeries and after years of following up on these patients and finding out that actually it's not solving their problems, he shut down the program. Mm-hmm. He shut down the program there at Johns Hopkins University. And in the article, I wish I can kind of remember it verbatim, but he said something along the lines of, we were basically collaborating with madness rather than trying to diagnose it and try to help these people by going along with these people's beliefs that they're a different gender.
There was a line about mutilating perfectly good bodies, something to that effect, too, because I read the same piece. And part of the reason that we're leading off this hour with this with the discussion in this way is because – as I mentioned earlier, it is very easy for a whole lot of people to feel bullied out of their common sense reactions to this stuff and to think, wow, I must be the one who's mistaken about this. I must be the unloving one. I must be the unkind one. I must be the problem because my views are making people kill themselves. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, when that's not the case at all. We've known this was a problem for ages when people had let common sense rule. Mm-hmm. And we did the common sense thing. We tried to encourage them to develop a gender identity that was consistent with their sex because then there's harmony.
Right.
And I remember, you know, I got my notes when you and I were talking on the phone yesterday. I was jotting notes down as we were thinking about this thing. And I was thinking about Bruce Jenner.
Yeah.
And I look at my notes. You can see what it says there.
Oh, yeah. Bruce Jennifer.
Yeah, I didn't do that on purpose, right. But Bruce Jennifer. I wrote that. But Bruce Jenner, it says here, will never be whole. That's what I wrote down, except for I used Jennifer instead. Bruce Jenner will never be whole. He will be fractured his entire life. And that's tragic. And what's also tragic is we are forced to affirm by our culture, the present state of our culture, that's a good thing. He received an award from Hollywood, the Arthur Ashe Courage Award.
Yeah. Wasn't it ESPN as well? Or
Multiple awards.
ESPN award as well.
This is what I mean. It's a cause celeb. It's like everybody's coming along behind him. Yay, aren't you wonderful? What? You are just encouraging this person's sadness in their life. And look, I can pretty much guarantee, and I'm curious what you have to say about this, if having a sex change operation doesn't resolve the internal conflict, having a bunch of Hollywood types telling you're wonderful is not going to resolve it either.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right?
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. But, I mean, at the time, it probably feels good to him.
Uh-huh. But I bet when he goes home, I mean, I don't know him, but it's hard. I can't believe that a person who is split in such a powerful way, such a profound way, can be satisfied. They're fractured, okay? And the fracture is obvious. He thinks he's a girl, though he knows his body is male.
I think his children know, too, because I think on Father's Day, I think they celebrated that with him.
Father's Day?
Yeah.
Oh, instead of Mother's Day?
Yeah, I think his children did. I could be mistaken, but if I recall, I remember seeing some people talk about that. Now they still see him as, I mean, he is their father.
Yeah, right. He's not their mother.
Right. I mean, that's the thing about sex change. I mean, when we say sex change surgery, I'm using air quotes here, because really you can't change your sex.
Correct.
I mean, I think of it this way. I say, look, when someone gets plastic surgery done on their face, let's say they're 50 years old and they want to look like they're 35, so they get plastic surgery done.
You can do that?
You should try it.
Who does that?
Yeah, no, but when you get plastic surgery done on your face to make you look younger, has that changed your actual age?
No.
The answer is no, because your age is a biological reality that cannot be changed.
Right.
And in the same way, when you get plastic surgery done to your sexual anatomy, does that change your actual sex?
Yeah.
No. It's just because sex is a biological reality.
And every
that can't be
cell
changed.
In your body is screaming what and sex you are.
That's right. Every cell in your body, well, exception of like hair Gametes. Cells and I think red blood cells. But yeah, right. For the most part.
Leave it to Alan to slice that one real thin. By the way, that's a virtue that is sometimes a little bit annoying, but it is a virtue because you know this guy's careful, all right?
Well, you know, because if you say every cell in your body, somebody would say, no, it's not true because hair cells and red blood cells.
It would be somebody else small. Who's right. unnecessarily. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
No, but you're right. Trillions of cells in your body are all stamped with XX or XY, and that's not going to change ever.
And this is why. When there is such a change, the person still has to take hormones on a regular basis to avoid their body producing secondary sexual characteristics like beard or breasts or however that works, you know, in order to continue the in a certain sense, the charade.
Yeah.
So all of this to say in our first segment, we've got to go to break in a second, but all of this to say we want you, brothers and sisters in Christ, not to be confused. Just because Bruce Jenner's confused, just because the rest of the culture, the politically correct culture, is confused, doesn't mean you have to be confused. Mm-hmm. Okay, Jesus said it best from the Matthew 19, mark it, from the beginning, God made them male and female. Okay, now that's the incarnate Son of God saying that, so that's a pretty good source.
Yep.
But you know what? You don't need to hear it from Jesus. Everybody knows this. Homo sapiens are gendered, and it's binary, and that's what provides an ability for human beings to reproduce, and without that, we're goners. That's the natural order. And by the way, for all those who argued in the past that homosexuality is natural and therefore it must be good, wonder what they're thinking now regarding this issue, because now that's in the ash can, that argument, because this whole cross-gender thing isn't. Anyway, let's go to break real quickly, and then we'll come back, and we're going to talk when we get back about how to respond in this culture on a personal and a public basis when confronted with these issues. Greg Kokel with Alan Schliemann on Stand to Reason. I have been working on one of the most important projects of my life for over a decade now, and it's finally come to press. It's called The Story of Reality, How the World Began, How It Ends, and Everything Important That Happens in Between. Now, The Story of Reality is a kind of a wide-angle view of the Christian story. It's a big-picture description of the meaning of the drama of human history. And it's meant to cover the basics of Christianity from a worldview perspective in a voice that's really conversational, not religious. It's kind of a mere Christianity for a new generation, if that comparison doesn't seem too bold. Now, I tell the story using five words that capture the meaning of all of human history from its beginning to its end. God, man, Jesus, cross, and resurrection. The narrative, it's infused with what I call a kind of soft apologetics, that is thoughtful reflections that are not argumentative, but rather are friendly appeals to common sense notions we're all aware of that point to the truthfulness of the Christian story. I think you'll find The Story of Reality to be, as Lee Strobel put it, a beautifully crafted description of the Christian worldview written in an accessible, winsome, and well-reasoned manner.
Would you like Greg, Alan, or Tim to come and speak at a location near you? Our speakers are accomplished and compelling presenters who address, from a biblical standpoint, topics like abortion, homosexuality, and evolution, as well as apologetics, theology, and evangelism. They're available to teach lectures and seminars, preach sermons, and lead workshops at single events or weekend-long conferences. Their aim is to help Christians like you effectively engage the culture around you with knowledge, wisdom, and character. To schedule Greg, Alan, or Tim, send an email to Melinda or Darcy. To learn more, visit str.org/training/speakers.
Great. Greg Kokel back with you here on Stand to Reason. My my guest co-host, Alan Schliemann, with me, partly because we're trading on his wonderful expertise in this case on the issue of transgender and navigating that world. So we spent, Alan, the first segment there talking in depth about just laying a foundation with the intention of encouraging Christians to be confident that their common sense about this is good sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Yeah.
And they're not crazy. The world's kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say the world, I don't mean transgender people are crazy. I mean the world's approach to this whole issue, which includes some transgender people. I think we think that transgender people are broken. And they're in anguish, and that is evidenced by the suicide rates being 26 times higher than the general population. And it also goes to the point that if we take a posture of affirming this, then we are affirming a state of mind that is 26 times more likely to have a person attempt suicide. Mm-hmm. I said suicide rate earlier. I meant attempted suicide,
yeah,
just to be precise here. The next, I want to shift now to a mentoring letter that you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And I write a mentoring letter that gets sent out to all our constituency who signed up for it. And if you haven't signed up for Solid Ground and the mentoring letter, just go to our website and sign up. It's easy, str.org, okay? And you can get that information. It's good stuff, but we also have Alan, who writes a mentoring letter as well every month, and that gets posted on the website.
And you can sign up for it as well, I think.
Oh, you can sign up for that, too.
For it,
okay,
yep.
There you go.
Yep.
And his deal more with his areas of expertise, and his most recent one, the one that went out September 1st, is titled Navigating the Transgender Discussion. And what Alan does in this piece, which you could read for yourself, but I'd like him to sum up some of the points here for us, is it gives us concrete steps, guidelines, for addressing the issue as we confront it in the marketplace, wherever that happens to be.
Right.
Whether it's coworkers or friends or family members, mm-hmm, whatever. How do you deal with particulars there? And Alan, you've given us 5 points that I think are really, really good and practical that we can begin to employ that will help us be better ambassadors for Christ when we confront this issue. Why don't, mm-hmm, you run us through those 5, and then we'll talk about some specific questions people have.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm trying to answer, like you said, the question of, like, what are some – when the rubber hits the road, what are you going to do, especially if you have a friend or a family member or a coworker who identifies as transgender? And so I try to – put in writing my thinking as to, like, what's operating in my mind as I make those decisions. Because,
right,
I run into people who identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and I'm making decisions as to what I'm going to say or how I'm going to respond. And so because everyone's been asking me, well, what do you do when this comes across your a situation that you're facing? And so this is what this list is about. So the first point I make is this: make your friendship with the person who identifies as transgender a high priority. Now, when I say high priority, I don't mean it has to be the highest priority. Obviously, I think our relationship with God and our maybe immediate family might
be.
But nevertheless, the point is that we don't want to move away from a relationship with someone who says, oh, they're transgender. Because I think the temptation for a lot of Christians might be to be like, well, you know, I'm a little uncomfortable with this person. I'm not sure how I'm going to navigate this relationship. I need to just sort of back away.
Right.
And I'm suggesting, no, we move in the opposite direction. We move, mm-hmm, towards them.
Mm-hmm.
And after all, I think relationships are like a bridge by which we can communicate truth, by which we can show compassion, by which we can show love, and eventually, hopefully, even have an opportunity to share the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
So if we abandon these...
That was almost your 4 or 5 points right there in one sentence.
Oh,
we'll get to it in more,
yeah,
detail, but it really,
oh, okay,
covered those bases.
Oh, that's a good
love
point.
And sharing the gospel and being friends,
right,
with them and whatever. I can just underscore.
Sure.
When you say make your friendship a high priority, and then you qualified it, well, there's other things that most priority. But hey, even if you just thought of it as a higher priority,
mm-hmm,
that is, as you pointed out, if you engage somebody who's transgender, that instead of moving away from them, you move toward them.
Right.
In a way that's appropriate for the relationship you have at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right. A lot of times, I certainly feel it, one encounters someone who is transgender, and then the impulse is to pull back oftentimes.
Yeah.
And you're suggesting when you feel the impulse to pull back, step in, and with a gesture or a kindness or conversation or something, so that you're not acting in rejection of that individual in virtue of their transgender.
Right. And it wouldn't just be an individual thing to do. I mean, I'm talking like a long-term relationship,
right.
You know. So, yeah, you would at that point, if you just discover right there that they're saying they're transgender, sure, at that moment you'd say, oh, wow, you know, thank you for sharing that with me. Thank you for being vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, tell me your story. I mean, yeah, that would be the initial thing. But then I'm also suggesting that as a matter of long-term practice, also pursue this person for
right.
a long-term relationship. After all, that's how we have a lasting impact in people's lives.
Right.
Well,
this leads directly to the second point, though.
Yeah, second point is to love them, or as reflecting, I guess I would have said to lead with love. And you know, part of it has to do with the fact that yes, we acknowledge that there is a high rate of attempted suicide with people who identify as transgender, and that should cause us alone to think, man, these people desperately need our love, they desperately need our compassion, and so therefore, I think that should be something that we lead with. The concern is that a lot of Christians, they probably know that, and they think, well, of course, Alan, that's obvious advice. We're Christians, we're supposed to love people. But oftentimes, the way that's expressed is just by resorting to kind of corny cliches.
Mm-hmm.
And the one of them that we were just talking about is saying simply something along the lines of, you know, well, God, you know, God hates the sin, but he loves the sinner, you know, as if that's a way to communicate to this person that I love you or that God loves them.
Well, it feels, when somebody says that, I think it feels to them like they're being faithful to both sides of the equation. They're being faithful to the truth of the sin of the condition
yeah.
in their mind. And they're also, well, I'll love the person. And mm-hmm. so they're trying to be faithful to both sides of that
right.
particular equation as a Christian.
Sure. I mean, it sounds biblically consistent, and it even comes across in their own mind as compassionate. But the problem is that a lot of people who identify as transgender and even who identify as gay and lesbian don't see themselves as doing something, but rather as being someone, and that is gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. And so when they hear the words, God hates the sin, they think, they only hear one word. They hear the word hate.
Mm-hmm.
That's the word that stands out most out of the entire sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And they think, God hates me,
mm-hmm.
and guess what? You hate them too, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it oftentimes I found, and by the way, this is also just from the feedback I've gotten from people who identify as LGBT. They say to me, Alan, I cannot process that statement when I hear Christians say it.
Mm-hmm.
Because being gay or being transgender is who I am, not just what I do. And so that's why I say, let's not try to reduce loving someone by simply making these statements. Let's try to do something to actually show that we love them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is often expressed by simply treating them with love, pursuing them, having a relationship, kind of going back to the first statement, make a relationship with them a high priority. That will signal to them that you love them. And since you're a Christian and you represent Jesus, that God loves them as well,
mm-hmm.
because they might be the only Christian that actually is pursuing them and loving them.
Mm-hmm.
And just incidentally, by the way, you know, I think a lot of people think that Christians kind of don't like gay people and don't like, you know, people who are transgender. But what's interesting is so many people who contact me privately, they share with me a story of someone they know who identifies as gay or transgender. And they often have told me, and so I've just been loving them because I'm not sure what to do just yet. And I'm like, thank God, you know.
Yeah.
I hear that all the time, you know, and actually it's usually in secular circles that I hear people who are more hateful and uncharitable towards people
right.
who they think, you know, are gay or lesbian or transgender.
You know, so it's like the tolerance road is a one-way street, basically. They want tolerance towards them, but they aren't tolerant to people who disagree with them.
Well,
that's part of it.
Yeah, that's true. My point was actually a little bit different. It was just simply that often I find when Christians are telling me about their relationships they
right.
have with LGBT, they are oftentimes telling me that they're loving them as a default because they don't know what else to do.
Correct.
But when I like see, for example, my child sometimes plays video games. Sometimes he does some online stuff. The kind of stuff that I see online by secular people is so nasty and filthy towards people who identify as LGBT.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I'm surprised at how nasty that is.
Yeah.
It's not Christians who are expressing this nastiness. Huh. It's non-Christians
yeah.
who are just bothered by the fact that these people are different than them.
Right.
And they have no basis, as we do, for truly loving people who identify as LGBT.
Right.
Because it's our Christian worldview that says these people are also made in God's image, mm-hmm. just like everyone else. Mm-hmm. They are the pinnacle of God's creation. They have intrinsic value, and they deserve dignity and respect.
You know, as I think just of myself and my own emotional reactions to these things, I think I respond negatively. When I do, it's not because of the gay or lesbian element. It is because of the political element that is associated with that.
Yeah.
The kind of nasty hostility that's what I was referring to about the tolerance street being a one-way street.
Yeah.
And I see that in a number of different issues right now. Not just that, but these things become so mean-spirited and politicized that it's kind of hard not to generalize to the group when you get certain members of the group have this way of posturing towards those who they perceive as disagreeing. And even though morally we do disagree, it doesn't mean that we're hostile towards them.
Yeah.
That's a good point. So this brings us now to kind of a juncture. And, let's do this. I'm looking at the clock here. Pronouns.
Yeah.
Okay, this is what you talked earlier about where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, this is where the rubber first meets the road.
Yeah.
Now what?
Yeah.
Because people who are transgender perceive themselves as a different gender than their body and want to be addressed in that way. And most of the time, we're not addressing people by a pronoun.
Right.
I'm not going to say to you, hey, he.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to say Alan.
Right.
You know, but I'm not going to say Beth.
Yeah.
Because that's a girl's name and not a guy's name. But most of the time, I think this is going to be expressed by the change of the name that they want to be addressed by.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it matters so much how you're referring to them in the third person when you're talking to other people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the issue here. So what is your counsel? How do you comport yourself in this situation?
Yeah, so this is what I've done. Whenever I'm faced with interacting with someone who identifies as transgender, I ask myself this question. Am I a trusted influence or in a loving relationship or friendship with this person? If the answer is yes, then I would feel confident then moving forward to discuss the question of whether calling them by their preferred name is something that's a good thing to do or to move forward with.
You mean yes, in the context of the relationship, but not necessarily at any given moment, right?
Right.
This is something in the relationship that you qualify as an individual to address.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but if the answer is no, if I don't know this person, if I'm not in a close relationship with them, and they're like saying, "Hey, my name is Janet," I'm just going to call them Janet. Yeah, I mean, whatever they want me to call them, it's fine. And the examples I've given and I found myself in, for example, is when I'm at the grocery store. I'm checking out my items. You know, the checker is clearly a biological male who's saying that they're a female. Is that the place?
And their name tag is
Their name tag is something female, Janet or whatever. You know, like I'm kind of giving an example. Is this really the place that I'm going to be like, hey, you know what? I know you're not really, your name isn't Janet. I'm sure it's some male name because I can tell you're a man. You know, and don't try to pull this whole like this is not the place in my mind to take a stand on this issue. And while there's a whole line of people waiting to check out behind mm-hmm. me, they're like, okay, who is this jerk, you know, who's just bullying this person in a sense? So to me, when you're in situations where you have no place speaking to their life because you have no connection or relationship with them, I let it go. I don't make a big deal mm-hmm. about it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. The way I've thought about this myself is because I've had a change of opinion of this since talking to you about this. You know, I kind of went on the truth side. Well, the truth is you're a guy, so I'm not going to go she, her, Janet, you know, mm-hmm. sweetheart. No, you're a guy. That's the truth of it. You know, so that was my temptation. But then I realized, look, if I do that kind of thing, what will most people, including that person, think of me? Are they going to say, you know what, he's got a point. Maybe I should be thinking about changing my self-perception.
Right.
No, this is not going to do any good. They're just going to think I'm a jerk. Mm-hmm. It's going to come across as mean-spirited. And there are plenty of verses in Scripture that say we shouldn't be doing that. And I think there are some goal line stands that we need to make. I don't think this is one of them, this particular way of dealing in the circumstances we're talking about. And so now I would be willing to address the person in the way that they are most comfortable in being addressed. Although I did get a call on the show last hour. You know, somebody was asking about a person who didn't identify with either gender and wanted to be called they. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a bit much at mm-hmm. that point. That struck me as more a political statement than it did as mm-hmm. a genuine psychological state of mind. Anyway, so that helps a bit. I do want to transition a little bit on this issue to what about when it comes to company policy or government policy, because now we're not dealing with individuals. We're dealing with a whole different thing, and you've got some thoughts about that. Let's go to break here, and we'll come back and finish up with my guest, Alan Schliemann, on the issue of navigating the transgender discussion.
Whether we realize it or not, everyone has a worldview. It's your set of beliefs about the way the world actually is. It's your picture of reality. And this belief system helps you answer the big questions of life. Where did I come from? What's wrong with the world? Is there a solution? Why am I here? So what you believe about the world determines how you live in the world. Your worldview has consequences. It will shape how you understand law, politics, race, gender, morality, and even science. That's why I'm excited to invite you to join me and a host of other speakers at this year's Rethink Apologetics Conference happening at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa on September 22nd and 23rd, 2017. Let's get equipped and rethink how you see the world by visiting rethinkapologetics.com and registering today.
You can connect with STR on social media to keep up to date on all the latest, including articles, videos, events, and giveaways. You'll easily find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Interact with STR staff, post comments, get involved with other like-minded Christians, weigh in by responding to some of the issues of the day, and see what's going on behind the scenes. Social media is your gateway to all the latest from STR, including speaking events, new podcasts, resources, articles, and what's on our mind today. Follow STR online and find all our social media platforms when you visit str.org and click Connect at the bottom of the page.
Hi, my name is Alan Schliemann. Pro-gay theology is mistaken for a number of reasons, but I'd like to point to you a particular error that's often overlooked. Find out what it is in this month's episode of my podcast, Thinking Out Loud. Look for it on iTunes or the top of the homepage at str.org.
Final segment here on Stand to Reason. Greg Kokel with Alan Schliemann giving you peace of our minds. That's kind of a physicalist. That's kind of a physicalist way of putting it.
No,
a piece. A piece is like a chunk, but it's a mind, so it's not really. I guess I probably shouldn't stress at the figure of speech, but that's what we're doing. We're being thoughtful.
Well,
here
the mind part's correct.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just there's no peace to it.
What is it I'm giving you then?
A thought of your mind.
No, there's more than one thought.
Well,
anyway,
thoughts of your mind.
You guys get the point, all right? Alan Schliemann, of course, my colleague here at Stand to Reason, a speaker, travels all over the country. We're lucky to have him here today because a lot of times he's out running around doing fabulous work, speaking on Islam and homosexuality and gender issues and evolution and, you know, tactics. In fact, you taught tactics at a church that I came to 2 weeks later and taught on something else,
New Jersey.
Of reality.
Uh-huh. Hawthorne Gospel Church.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was great.
There you go.
They love my presentation.
Oh, that's good. Well, I'm sure it was a great presentation. You had a good teacher. How about
that? It's pretty good content, you know. The delivery was really much better than the content, but no, I'm kidding.
Well, What I want to talk about now is we talked about the, you know, we're engaging as a person on an individual basis, but when it comes to the gender concerns, we also got, you know, policy issues. These mm-hmm. are now addressing the issue kind of writ broad, and we got two categories of policy. We have government policy type things, the things yeah. that relate to schools and government mm-hmm. and all of that stuff. And then we also have corporate policy and yeah. on a private sector mm-hmm. concern. So you made a comment to me just a moment ago on the break that I want you to lead with, you know, as you talk about these two different spheres. And let's just start out there.
Well, there was a thought that came to my mind when you were saying how sometimes when you come across somebody who identifies as transgender or something like this, you're immediately there's an instinctual sort of like, you feel an anger because you think of all the political aspects that come with that topic.
Which is what I deal with most of the time.
Which is what, yeah. But not that you feel necessarily anger towards the person,
right.
you know. And this is something that I've written about even when I've discussed homosexuality. I've said, look, one of the things we have to be careful of is to make a distinction between our public policy concerns and our personal interactions with people who identify as LGBT. And what I mean by that is, we have to realize that when we're talking to an individual person, we can't let our anger about, you know, school policies, corporate policies, same-sex marriage laws that have been legalized or whatever, and our anger and hostility towards that carry over into our personal interactions mm-hmm. with people who are actually identify as LGBT.
See, that the temptation then is to start arguing the public policy concern with the homosexual, and immediately you are put at odds with them on things that are not as critical.
Right. Or to let your anger color the way you talk
yeah.
to them.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Your anger towards the public policy thing to color
right.
or affect the way that you speak with them. That's
right.
that's kind of like the character aspect of being an ambassador.
Okay.
The manner in which we communicate yeah. should be warm, gracious,
that's
and kind.
That's great. Yeah. So we talked a little bit about how to address the pronoun issue, and largely as a general rule, if we're not in an intimate relationship with the person and we're in a position to at some point to address the concern and try to encourage them out of that direction, regardless of what pronouns we use, it's the real issue is whether we're going to try to work with them out of it. That in those cases, the other cases, we just let it slide and not sound mean-spirited or like a jerk and just kind of go with the flow. That's not a moral compromise on our part. That's just being cordial and generous. Actually, let me introduce one of the other points here that you have in your piece before we get to the corporate thing. That's this one about family rules, because I think it does apply at this point. If we're dealing with outsiders,
yeah.
you know, we're going to have a much more, in a certain sense, laissez-faire attitude towards their behavior, their attitude, whatever, because they're not Christians.
Right.
Go ahead and tell
right,
us
yeah.
about
so,
that.
I mean, the way I put it was, don't put family rules on those people outside the family. And that's actually the way my pastor often expresses it, but I like it that way because it's kind of memorable. But I mean, it's sort of a 1 Corinthians 5 policy, I think it is, where Paul talks about, look, what business is it of ours to judge those outside the church? We're supposed to judge those inside the church. We're supposed to do what we can to manage, you know, Christians within our church body who are engaging in sin, professing to be followers of Jesus, but thumbing their nose at God's law and still trying to think that they're okay. And Paul says, no, we're supposed to call them out. Non-Christians, we can't expect to act like Christians. So we shouldn't spend our energy and time trying to get our transgender friend or person who identifies as LGBT, whatever it might be, to live just like us in all these ways. And if you think about it, we don't do that with our other non-Christian friends. I mean, yeah, we might bring up moral issues, but for the most part, I don't take my atheist friends and sit there and say, hey, you know what? You need to stop lying. You need to stop downloading porn. You need to stop downloading MP3s
using
that are
bad language.
Bad language. You know, last weekend you got drunk. We don't do that.
Naughty, naughty.
What our hope for them is for them to come to know Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, is the final point I make there, which mm-hmm. is number 5, which is make Jesus the issue. Don't make managing their behavior the issue. And I'm not saying that we should never make a moral claim or mm-hmm. say what's true. Of course we can. I'm just speaking in generalities here. But I think ultimately what makes the most difference is that we try to present the gospel of Jesus Christ to them. If we really want to see lasting change in their life because we're motivated by love for them and compassion, tell them about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
After all, even if they changed their gender identity but didn't accept Christ, their eternal destiny would
That's
still
right.
be in jeopardy.
Right.
And so that's why I think our hope for these people who are transgender is not a change in gender identity, but in spiritual identity.
Oh, that's a great way to put it. Say it again. No, it's great. It's
really great. Our hope for our transgender friends and family is not that they change their gender identity, but their spiritual identity.
Right, right. Okay, so that kind of gives you the big picture there. And just to review, we got some ground to cover here quickly, but make your friendship a high priority. Love them. Be wise with names and pronouns. Don't put family rules on those outside the family and make Jesus the issue. I mean, this is great. You can get this whole thing online. It's Alan's September mentoring letter for Stand to Reason. But let's go back to this gender, this whole issue, though, when it comes to policy, both corporate and public policy issues. So I've got an article here from August 22nd. Rockland parents grill school board over transgender discussions in kindergarten. And here's a school that used some a book that talked, you know, instructed that really essentially this book told a tale regarding transgender issues with kindergarten kids.
Right.
And these kids from this school, the parents said their children came back in tears not knowing what gender they were, you know, for example. And their objection was they never were informed about this. They should have a say in what is communicated to the children on these issues. It's not a school thing. So there's an example of a policy issue. Or maybe you have that's a public policy issue.
Public policy.
And maybe you've got corporate or private sector policy issue where people are in corporations and they have to go to these classes. You know, so we got about 4 minutes left. I don't know. Can you give them some guidelines about how to approach these issues? Now we're not dealing with the sensitivities of an individual.
Right.
Now we're dealing with policies that groups are expected to follow, either directed by government or by one's business or organization.
Right. And so now it becomes, I think, more appropriate to confront the issue in a more significant and perhaps vigorous way. So I think when it comes to issues like that, where they're implementing policies, they're affecting our culture. Okay, so our concern is for the common good of culture. This is why we oppose, for example, same-sex marriage. I mean, yeah, maybe in our personal interactions, we don't necessarily have to bring it up every time we're talking to someone who identifies as gay. But as a matter of public policy, same-sex marriage hurts the culture, right? It denies a child their mother or their father or both and so on and so forth. And in the same way, these kinds of public policy requirements that schools are making or whatever also cause confusion in children as many of these kids went back home saying,
right,
you know, am I a boy? Am I a girl? Can I change? Like somebody just did in this, you know, in our classroom.
It says, my daughter came home crying and shaking so afraid she could turn into a boy, one parent said.
Yeah. You know what's crazy is as I look at the researchers who are kind of in the top level of discussing this subject, you know, like for example, like Camille Paglia, are you familiar with this author? She's a feminist. She's a lesbian. She's, you know, studies this topic all the time. She says, look, any adult who collaborates with a child to encourage them to adopt a gender identity that's not their biology is guilty of child abuse. Mm. I mean, she's a lesbian. She's not. This isn't a person who's in favor of you know, the Christian worldview, right?
Right, right.
And so a lot of these people, actually, when you look at the studies on this, find out that actually it's not consistent with what a lot of thinkers are saying. And if you look at the American Psychological Association has a handbook. It's called On Psychology and Sexuality, and they talk about, and so does the psychiatric department as well, the American Psychiatric Association. They say that like something like 70-something percent of children who have this sort of impulse to feel like they're of a gender different than their biology, these things, 70% of them resolve themselves by the time they reach puberty.
Especially if, you know, and this is probably in an old way of thinking of it, where there are parents that are lovingly guiding them in a way with a gender identity that's consistent with their sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I wonder if we continue on the same course, if that statistic will be the same 10 years from now as people look back, as researchers look back. I think that since this is a relatively new development historically, that statistic probably reflects in a certain sense the natural course of things when there isn't an artificial pressure to be adventuresome with exploring new gender identities, which is what we see now. Yeah. You know, but given the fact that the attempted suicide rate is 26 times higher for these people mm-hmm. that continue on. Why would we want to do that? And in fact, this, I think, is a fair thing to bring up in those environments where discussions like that are taking place, whether public policy or corporate policy. Why would we want to encourage this? That's mm-hmm. There's a Columbo question. Why? Well, it makes them feel better. Well, apparently it doesn't.
Yeah.
Because the rate, and maybe because this is a radio show, we'll have Amy put up the bib source on the statistic, mm-hmm. and maybe you can give that to her mm-hmm. about the 41% attempted suicide mm-hmm. compared to 1.6, which is a 26 times difference. Then you could point that out. Maybe it makes them feel better in the moment, but it's not better for them because about half of these people are going to try to kill themselves.
Yeah.
And I don't think us being real supportive of their gender choice is going to make much of a difference there because it doesn't seem to be the case. So if we want to talk about what's good for them, this is a point that could be brought up in those discussions.
Yeah. And, in this particular article that you brought up, this is about a school. And so when you're talking about a school, you're talking about your own children. If you're a parent, you are ultimately responsible for the well-being of
your children. Your kids, right?
And you have every right, I think, and my kids don't go to a school like that, but if they did, I would feel very comfortable, in the sense of justified in saying something to protect the right. The welfare of my children.
That's right. And it's our job to train our children. So if you're a parent with a child that is going through, that is at all tempted by gender confusion, this is the time to steer them graciously and lovingly in the right direction. Now, with some, that may be much more difficult than with others. Mm-hmm. But like you said, if that 70% number is a good reflection of what the past procedure has produced, that means you got a 70% chance of guiding your child to a healthy gender consistency kind of, So their mental gender and their physical gender are the same. Anyway, gosh, here comes the music. Alan, that went fast, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, there's so much more we could talk about. Stay in touch. The things that Alan writes on our website. Sign up for his newsletter, or rather his mentoring letter, and our stuff if you haven't. Alan, thanks for spending time and shedding so much light on this.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we appreciate you. Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason. That's it, friends, for today. Give them heaven, my friends. Bye-bye now.